On this episode of Still Loading, the world is not enough. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Still Loading. For this week's episode, we are bringing back the Bond game review series at Justin. Say hello, sir.
What's up, everyone?
That's right. Justin is back. We are talking about James Bond games. We started this series earlier in this year, kind of with GoldenEye was pretty much like the big one. Mm-hmm. And we kind of lost track of it. Well, I shouldn't say lost track. I actually had other stuff I wanted to get done on the podcast with Mario Month. And as you know, you've been listening to a bunch of composer interviews, but I want to get back to it. I want to get back to the Bond series. So I brought Justin back as usual for all these Bond games. And we are talking, I don't know if it's, would you say it's your top one or two?
I think I would actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, it's the other N64 James Bond game, The World Is Not Enough, based off the movie, which I actually love, but it's not well received overall.
Yeah, it really isn't.
So let's dive right into it. So The World's Not Enough was released for the N64, and I forget what year already, in 2000, on October 17th.
Facts.
2000. which actually, now that I'm thinking, no, it's not going to be close. I was trying to think, like, when is this episode going to get released? Because this is actually going to be, like, we're recording this probably at least 3 to 4 weeks in advance, believe it or not. So, but I don't think it's going to be October 17th. So it won't be the 19th anniversary of this game. Darn.
For shame.
So, yeah. So this game was released on October 17th in 2000. The movie came out the year prior, and the movie was fine. I actually love this movie. Not ironically, I legitimately love this movie. Part of it is probably because it was my first James Bond movie that I ever saw. My dad taped it off of one of those free Showtime things. Remember, you know how every now and then for when you had cable in the 90s, they would be like, here, there's some extra channels that you don't have to see if you'd want to buy them. You know, pay for them. And one of them was Showtime, and they had this movie on. And my dad taped it on our VHS player off of the TV.
The original DVR.
Exactly. And that's exactly how I watched it the first time. And I remember I was obsessed with this movie. I watched it so many times.
Yeah. This was the one right after GoldenEye, right?
No.
Or
so,
two?
GoldenEye and then Tomorrow Never Dies was in 97. GoldenEye in 95, Tomorrow Never Dies 97, The World's Not Enough 99. And then Pierce Brosnan's last James Bond movie was Die Another Day, which I wish he could have gotten a better send-off.
Yeah. This was the second Bond film I've seen in theaters then.
Really?
Yeah, wasn't old enough for GoldenEye. So...
So you saw Tomorrow Never Dies, the villain who's... Actually, that is a PlayStation. They made it on PlayStation. I have that. I have Tomorrow Never Dies on PlayStation. We're going to have to cover that sometime. But the main premise of that movie, if you remember, is a guy who wants to... What he does is that he fixes news stories by causing chaos. Like he, you know, starts a war... He tries to start a war between Britain and China. And all for what? So he can get... the exclusive media rights and exclusive broadcasting rights in China for the next 100 years, and his tenants, his pillars of his media empire, magazines, newspapers, and radio, besides TV, of course.
The biggest media.
All three of which, well, three out of the four. TV is still around, but it's been modified, but magazines are dead. Print in general is just dead. I find that funny. Like, Bond didn't need to defeat that villain. Time would have. You know, he would have invested all of his money into that. Anyway, well, I kind of ruined that joke for when we cover that game, but I'll bring it around again.
Mm-hmm.
So The World Is Not Enough was Brosnan's third outing as Bond. And it basically, the plot of the movie follows Bond is retrieving money for one of M's personal friends, Robert King, and it turns out that the money that he retrieved for them ends up being a bomb. And so they suspect that it is a terrorist named Renard, because Renard kidnapped King's daughter. You know, not in the movie, you don't see it at all. This all happens, you know, I guess technically off screen before, like, you don't even, it never shows up in any Bond movie. They tell you it at least, but that's a lot of plot. I feel like that's just all laid out in exposition. That could have been a Bond movie in and of itself. True, and then yeah. It would have been a good sequel. They could have sequelized it, kind of like what they did with Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace.
Yes.
So Bond goes to investigate, but he goes first by checking on King's daughter, Elektra, who she was brought back safely, but she actually escaped. Like, she fought her way out. Or so you thought. Spoiler alert. Actually, spoiler alert all over this thing. So Bond goes to investigate while also trying to keep her safe, because who knows? They don't know if Renard is going to go after her, since he went after her father and killed him. And you basically, without going into all the detail, because it's kind of hard to explain without having it written down in front of me, Bond finds out that it was actually Elektra, King's daughter, the guy that he retrieved the money from the beginning of the movie, his daughter is the one that actually planted the bomb and killed her own father. And you find out it's because she was bitter at him for not trying to pay the ransom when she was kidnapped. She ends up seducing her captor, the terrorist, Renard, and that's how the whole plot is. It's actually the plot of the movie is actually really good. The main detractor, Denise Richards.
That's right, yeah.
What do you remember of this movie? I know I kind of laid out the plot for you. And actually, Denise Richards, for those who don't know who she is, she became famous off of a movie called Wild Things, where she had a very steamy threesome sex scene in it with Matt Dillon, which that's a blast from the past. You don't ever see him in movies often anymore, right? And so she was like the hot thing at the time, literally because of that movie. And so she played a nuclear physicist named Christmas Jones. And it leads to there's two bad Bond girl names in this movie. One is hers, Christmas Jones. And then in the beginning of the movie, Bond is injured in the cold open. And he has to get cleared by the doctor, and so he seduces the doctor, and her name is Dr. Molly Warmflash.
Choice.
It's pretty bad. So that was I just can't get over that name, Warmflash. It's just I don't fucking get it. Like, why
what
would
does it mean?
No, it's I get it, but I don't know why you would have to be that on the nose. Like, that's not like, I mean, to be fair, they've never really been subtle. If you go back to, like, Goldfinger, the third movie, the name is Pussy Galore, which is not just, that's not a very, it's not a great name either.
I don't get it.
What does it mean? So anyway, and that, of course, by Denise Richards being named Christmas Jones, the final line of the movie, Bond is wining and dining her. It's literally, like, the final shot, and, you know, he's romancing her, and he goes, I thought Christmas only came once a year. And collectively, everyone in the world groans, because that is an awful line. And Pierce Brosnan had to deliver it. Like, I don't even... There's a lot of people who give him shit for those movies. I don't blame him for those movies. Like, no. I love his movies, but part of it is part of it is nostalgia. I wouldn't even say it's ironically. It's a lot of it is nostalgia. But, like, going back on it, the dialogue's pretty shitty in those movies.
Yeah,
like,
this really shitty. Was not good.
No, it was not. So, sorry I cut you off. What is your recollection of that movie? You said it was the second one you ever saw in theaters.
It was actually the second one I've ever seen in theaters. I don't remember a ton of it. This is the one out of all the Pierce Brosnan films I remember the least. And it's probably just because I only saw it once in theaters, and I was a kid at the time, so I was just kind of like, yeah, explosions, yeah, Bond.
I'm just thinking about it now, though, but if you saw Tomorrow Never Dies in theaters, that means you would have been 9 when your parents took you to see that.
Yep.
What do you think? Is that young for a Bond movie? I think it's just a little bit.
Like, yeah, for it's the real amount, close.
For the amount of sex and violence in that, yep. Like, especially so in Tomorrow Never Dies specifically, in the cold open, Bond ejects another pilot up out of a jet that Bond's flying. Like, he has a pilot, an enemy pilot that's sitting in the seat behind him because he hijacked the airplane. Not in midair, he took off with it. Let's not be completely ridiculous here. And he ejects him right up into the fuselage of the jet that's directly above him, and it takes out the jet and explodes. Like, that dude's neck would be broken. Yeah. Like, he's getting jettisoned into a metal undercarriage. So you don't remember much of it?
I honestly don't. And yeah, I really just think it was because I only saw it once, and it was in theaters, and I was still pretty young at the time.
You would have been 11, because you were born in 88, right?
Yep.
You would have been 11. I would have been 10 when this movie came out. And I didn't see it when I was 10. I think I was like 12 or 13, because it was on, like, you know, they put movies so quick. I mean, a lot of those cable services, they get movies on there really quick, but obviously you have to pay for those services like HBO and Showtime and Cinemax and whatnot. Skinemax, as some call it. I've actually never watched anything on Cinemax, like, once.
Nah.
I've never paid for cable. Well, I don't have cable currently, but, like, you know, my parents would never pay for those cable channels. We never had HBO. We never had Showtime. We never had any of those. I have HBO Go now for Game of Thrones, and, well, Game of Thrones is over, but all the other shows that they have on there, but I don't actually have a cable package that has HBO on it.
Yeah, never had it. Never had TV.
How did you play those games? That's kind of like the groundwork for the movie. Just wanted to kind of give a brief overview of it. Brief overview of it. So, yeah, Pierce Brosnan's third outing as Bond. Actually one of the better stories, and actually some of the better villains. The actress who plays Elektra is Sophie Marceau, and she's amazing in it. The actor who plays the terrorist, Renard, is played by, I'm blanking on his name. He's, like, phenomenal in it, though. Robert Carlyle, that's his name. That's who plays Renard. And it's weird, because the picture of him now, he's bald in the movie, and the picture that's on Wikipedia, or not on Wikipedia, but when you Google him, is that he has a full, like, big, like, long full locks of hair, like a full head of hair. But no, he is phenomenal in this movie, and so is the actress who plays Elektra, like I said. Pierce Brosnan, I actually think this is his best performance as Bond, even though the dialogue he's given is complete shit. Judy Dench's M is once again amazing as always. She was such a good M. Like, I'm happy with how they kind of finished off her story with the Bond series. Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen Skyfall. The spoilers on that, for those if you don't want to know it, she dies in that movie.
Yeah, but she goes out swinging.
She does. She overall really good performances across the board. Robbie Coltrane as Zhukovsky. Valentin Dmitrievich Zhukovsky. I can't do an accent. He was amazing in that. Literally the only blemish on this acting record is fucking Denise Richards.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, like, her dialogue is equally as shitty as everyone else's, but everyone else is pretty good at delivering it. Denise Richards just
flat overall.
It's very flat.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's dive into the game. So the game follows the events of the movie pretty closely. They elaborate a little bit more on things like in the opening scene that I was talking about, where Bond goes to retrieve the money that ends up being a bomb. You don't see much. You just find him. The movie pretty much opens in the banker's office with him talking to the banker, trying to get the money. In the game, you actually walk through the bank. You have to go to a safety deposit box, get an appointment card, so that way you can go see the banker and all this other stupid stuff that doesn't make any sense. Like, why would the appointment card be in the safety deposit box? Why wouldn't he just have it on his person? I don't know. And then you have to fight your way out. You have to erase surveillance tape of you being there and this and that. In the movie, he doesn't fight his way out. He barricades the door after the banker gets killed by an assassin. Oh, man, there's so much to this movie. I realize I didn't mention the assassin. I won't go into detail with it. It's not really necessary for this. But he barricades the door, and then he rips off the ropes from the oh my gosh, the screens, like the screens on the windows. And even though he's on like the fifth floor, somehow this one screen has like 200 feet of rope for him to like rappel down with. He ties it around his belt and ties the other end around the guy he knocked out. A guy he knocked out as like a counterweight, and he just jumps off the side of the building with the money and rappels down. It's a great opening, but it doesn't make any sense with where he got that from. Anyway, in the game, you fight your way out. So we played the first couple levels of this. We actually played the multiplayer a lot as we were kids, and we're going to talk about that later. But Justin, now you haven't played this game in a while, right?
True. Yep.
So what was your impressions of it, you know, all these years later coming back to it?
Honestly, I was quite surprised because it held up really well.
Yeah.
I mean, the graphics are the, I mean, N64.
It's N64. But anti-aliasing is shit.
Yeah. But I mean, the colors were real vibrant. The animations were actually pretty cool. So like the Magnum, when you reload it, like you see all the empty shells fall out of the barrel and you like spin it to reload it. Like the animation, I was like, wow, this was on the N64. That's not bad.
No, it really wasn't. The only thing that I would say it was bad with the animations is that there was no facial animations, yeah. But it was the N64. Like they couldn't really do that.
Right. Yeah.
It's like just these awkward staring, these awkward, like
flat, like no emotion, just
Dr. Molly Warm Flash in the game had like the eyes of like one of those, like, what is it, like those fembots from like Austin Powers, you know? He was terrifying. Yeah. M's face looked like one of the faces from the Planet of the Apes, like one of the monk. Like it was it did not look like none of the biggest problem was Q. So yeah, Q for those who don't know about the James Bond franchise, Q is the quartermaster. He gives Bond all of his gadgets that Bond's so well known for. And I think The World's Not Enough was the 19th Bond movie at the time. The 20th, I want to say, was Die Another Day. Huh. Hold on, let me think that. Connery did 6. We're talking canon ones, because Connery did a 7th one that doesn't count.
That's right.
Connery did 6, Moore did 7, so that alone right there is 13. Then Lazenby did 1, so that's 14. Dalton did 2, so that's 16. And then Brosnan did 3. That makes sense. That was the 19th movie. Yeah. So, because then Brosnan's 4th movie would have been the 20th Bond movie in the franchise. Sorry to get super geeky there, but that's what you come to this podcast for.
Yeah.
So, it was the 19th movie. So, it was the same actor playing Q in all 19 movies. Now, granted, Q did not appear in all those 19 movies, but it, like, anytime that Q was in a movie, it was that actor playing it. It was no one else.
Wow.
Unlike Bond's like CIA friend Felix Leiter, that's played by different actors in a bunch of the movies. That's why if you ever watch his old movies, anytime Felix comes into a scene, he always says, "Oh, Felix, you old dog," because they have to let the audience know who Felix Leiter is, because the actor changed almost every movie. There's only one actor who played it twice, I think. I think his name was like, I can't remember the actor's name, but he played it like 20 years apart. He was Felix in Live and Let Die, the first Roger Moore film in like 1973, I want to say, 74. And then he played Felix Leiter in Timothy Dalton's last Bond film in 1989. So it was like over 20 years apart from each other. Or no, not quite 20 years apart, excuse me. It was like 15 to 16. It was a long time, though. David Hedison, something like that. I'm a huge Bond geek, sorry. Like, I love this type of stuff. But the same Q, though, was played through all of them. And so they had Q in the movie. It's the same guy. In fact, it's his last appearance as Q, because unfortunately Desmond Llewellyn is the actor's name and he passed away. Not even like, this sounds awful to say, but not even like by something, not even like by sickness. It was a car accident. So it's not even like something took him. It's that he was just robbed of the world. I don't know. It's so sad, because he probably would have kept playing that role until he couldn't anymore. He was old, though. He was like in his 80s, so it's not like he died young, but it's still a shame, because you know he probably would have done more.
Right.
It's even more sad is that in The World's Not Enough, his final lines of the movie are basically, it's kind of ominous, because it says, his final lines are like, what are the two things I've always taught you? And he basically, even though it's weird because he's never like had a mentor relationship with Bond, they just like rib each other all the time. But he's like, first off, never let them see you bleed. And second, always have an escape plan. And he like, and then the floor gives way and he like goes down in an elevator and he just watches, and Bond's just watching him like go down. And he's just staring, making eye contact with Bond. And it's just like this awkward like scene. And it's even more awkward to know that he died after the movie, because right. it was like a fatherly moment. Like, what's the two things I always taught you? And then the dad died. It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, that's...
I know, right? So, yeah, so you said the controls were better than you remember. Sorry, I don't even know how we got on that tangent. we were talking about the character models and the graphics. So, Q looks fucking nothing like Desmond Llewellyn. The dude has like a buzz cut. Desmond Llewellyn had, and it was like dirty blonde hair. Desmond Llewellyn is a white old man and with white pasty hair, like, or was unfortunately a white, but
it almost looked like a fat Boris from like GoldenEye.
I could see that actually. Actually, you know, I bet they just reused the assets.
Yeah, they're just like, hey.
I almost wonder though, because the movie came out in 2000 and Desmond Llewellyn died, I think, before the premiere of The World Was Not Enough. Mm. So I wonder if they didn't include him in it out of respect. Yeah. I don't know. I'd love to, like, if I ever get a chance to interview any Rare developers, I would love to ask them about that, see if they have anything to say with it.
Yeah, it'd probably honestly be the only time they ever get that question.
Right? Yeah. That'd be a good question to ask. Any Rare developers who listen to this, reach out to me. Yes. I don't think there are any, but in case there is, stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. Hit me up. So, yeah, the graphics, like you said, they really weren't too bad. The textures looked pretty solid. I mean, like I said before, the anti-aliasing is kind of shit.
Yeah.
But it was the N64. Yep. What was probably one of the more surprising elements for you? Graphics, controls, sound... Like, surprisingly good.
I'd have to say, because, you know, like, everyone always goes back to GoldenEye, like, oh, that's the best Bond game.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, I think graphic-wise, I was probably the most impressed, because it was, like, you think of GoldenEye, it doesn't hold up today.
Not really.
Like, graphically,
specifically the face, like, you ever notice like the faces in GoldenEye were kind of very blurry and very like muffled? These were actually a lot more clear. They weren't clear, but they were crystal compared to what was in GoldenEye.
Right. Yep. And it was like, even though it was frustrating at sometimes, because the game, maybe the instruction manual has it, but the game never really tells you how to complete your missions. You kind of just have to fumble around with the gadgets.
In GoldenEye, you mean? Or in this?
In this one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the manual does tell you some things, but it really doesn't hold your hand. You're supposed to read the objectives and then figure out what you can do with it from there.
Yeah, so at the beginning, it's like, wait, what? I was supposed to do that? And at first, it's like, it's frustrating, because you got to like restart the whole mission if you forget something. But...
If you accidentally kill a civilian, as we found out so many times.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, outside of that, once you understand that mechanic of the game, it becomes actually pretty cool, because now you're like, it's part puzzle in a small sense, because you have to figure out what gadget to use on which object. So it kind of gives you that spy element.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that, yeah.
And then just the missions in general, it really plays well to the level. So I was actually, out of everything, I was actually most impressed with that.
Like the level design, would you say?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd agree with that. For me, it was actually the controls. 'Cause I was expecting to not really quite get them anymore, because it's a single joystick shooter, a single joystick FPS. But the designers do a really good job, and they do this in GoldenEye too. So I would actually probably put this, if I had to pick like one surprising element for me, would be the controls in GoldenEye as well. Because I'm not saying they're good, but for the time, they're better than you would expect them to be. because you can go forward, backward, look left, and look right with a joystick, but you can use the C buttons to strafe. So you can kind of get... it's kind of frustrating because, like, you can't... Like, if you try to move forward and hit C left, then you go, like, super fast and you barrel around the corner and it's not really accurate. But if you... If you kind of start getting used to it, you can actually get the movement down pretty quick. It actually was like pretty well done. They found a good way around it, or a happy medium. So I was, controls, believe it or not, it pleasantly surprised me because I wasn't expecting them to hold up well. And they, I mean, objectively, no, they don't. But at the same time, they could be a lot worse.
Right. Like the fact that like I just picked it up and...
You were able to remember after not playing for like 15 years.
Right.
Or maybe not that long. But now, what was one thing that you were kind of disappointed, like surprised at how like bad it was, like surprised at how disappointed you were in it? I can, just so it gives you time to think, mine is the voice acting. And don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about the compression rates or the sound quality. I get that. You're putting voices on a Nintendo 64 cartridge. It's not going to freaking sound good. I get that. I have no issues with them having to compress sound bites. In fact, on a technical level, it's really impressive because the N64 couldn't normally do stuff like that. My beef is the voice acting.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I'm pretty sure they got Judi Dench to do her voice again for M. But, like, that was not Pierce Brosnan as James Bond. That was not Q, definitely, as... Well, I mean, they couldn't really get him. I just said that he died.
Yeah.
Kind of morbid to think about. I couldn't really get Q, which is fine. You know, I get that.
Bring him back.
Yeah, right? So, I didn't have an... Like, it was just bad. Like, everything was bad about the voice acting. And I guess... You know, I know voice acting back then wasn't necessarily good. That wasn't considered like an art form. Like, developers didn't really care about that.
Right.
It wasn't until years later they were like, oh, maybe we should actually try with this. So I understand that. But at the same time, there's certain elements where it's just like, this is just so, so bad. Like, I was really disappointed with the quality of voice acting. Like, even for the time, I think I would have been disappointed for it with it. As a kid, I didn't notice too much, but... As an adult, I really don't like it.
Yeah, it kind of like, at first I was like, oh wow, they even have voice acting in this.
And then you're like, oh wow, they even have voice acting.
Yeah, I was like, you know, they could have done without it, honestly. But yeah, because I was like they kind of have cutscenes, like brief ones. But I mean, again, it's N64.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
and all in engine cutscenes because they couldn't do FMV video on the N64.
Right.
Yeah. There is actually one game that at least one. I don't want to say for all. The Resident Evil 2 port had full motion video. They found a way to compress it in order to fit on a Nintendo 64 cart, which is a little disturbing, actually.
Yeah.
That's wizardry. I don't know how you figure that out because the N64 cart. Do you remember how much space it had? It wasn't a lot. I think
not
it was I was going to say 8 megs. There's no way it was that low.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure even like some Super Nintendo cards had 16 megs.
Right, yeah.
I mean, those were the RPGs generally. They were like the reserved for the big high-end or like expensive games, but there are some that actually had it.
Mm-hmm.
So did you come up with one for you with how much, something that disappointed you surprisingly?
Yeah, my first thought was the voice acting. So if I had to pick another, I'd almost say the enemy design.
They all kind of look the same.
Yeah, that and...
So it hold 32 to 512 megabits. So 512,
that's not bad at the high end.
Mbits. So Mbits, it was megabit. Okay. Yeah. Just want to make sure that it wasn't, because like you have, so like, you know how like when you're looking at like internet speeds, like MBS is not actually megabytes per second. It's like megabits or something like per second.
It's like they could shave off the extra 24.
Not even. I forget what it is. It's a weird ratio though. It's not even like the extra 24. It's like more than that or something like that. But anyway, sorry, go on. So you were saying it was the enemy design.
Because a lot of them, you know, I get it, you gotta save space, you gotta use the same textures and everything, but just overall, like, I just chose the secret agent difficulty, which is like middle of the road.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just like they just kind of ran at you, and you, like, there was one part where
that almost seems like the AI is what you have an issue with. Not even necessarily the design visually, but you're talking about like technically on under the hood.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And like the one part, like, it was really cool. The whole staircase blew up, and like three guys like came down on cable lines. And maybe it was my positioning, but I mowed all three of them down with
in like a second.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
They're not too bright. It does get harder as the game goes on, but I mean, it's been a while since I've played all the way through. I did beat this game when I was a kid. Like, this is one of the ones on the N64 that I did beat, but I don't remember much of how the game ends. I just remember, like, I think it got pretty difficult. My favorite missions are actually the middle of the way through. There's a lot of stealth missions, like when you go to Elektra's chateau, after in the movie, that's where they, you know, they do the whole some, but in the game, they skip that some. And you have to go exploring around her chateau at night, and you have to sneak by her guards and stuff like that. It's actually a really, like, well-done stealth section from what I remember, because it was not easy. You actually had to be stealthy and sneaky. You had these, like, darts that you could use to knock out enemies, but you had a finite amount of them, and it pissed me off because I never understood how you can knock them out because you weren't allowed to kill them. So you could knock them out. So what you can do is if you get the stunner on the watch and you start stunning them, they won't alert anyone because they're stunned, and then you just punch them until you knock them out. It's great.
That's amazing.
And you don't even have to like switch between unarmed and the stunner. You just keep hitting the fire button for your weapon or whatever.
That's right. I saw you do that, and I was like, smooth. Yeah.
Yeah. That's because you're not alternating. Automatically, if you're from a distance and you use a zapper, it just zaps him from a distance. Right. But if you're close while using it, then he'll alternate punches and zaps. Right?
That's pretty cool.
I remember when I first figured that out, I was like, I was freaking the fuck out as a kid. I was like, that's how you're supposed to. Oh, I was so mad. I spent so much time trying to figure out that stupid level, and it was that the whole time. Wow. So, all right. So I could see that. Do you have any other final comments on the enemy AI or anything, or the design at all?
Not really.
I feel like I cut you off, so I just want to make sure you get to say everything.
Nah. Yeah, that was pretty much it. I'm like, blowing up the monitors.
So, this is that era of first-person shooters where
anything
remotely technological just explodes. So, I was in the first mission, and you're in an office, you're in the bank, like I said, and there's a bunch of civilians. It says not to kill the civilians. So I didn't. I didn't mess around, didn't shoot any of them. If you accidentally, so I was like, well, what happens when I shoot the computer? I bet it just, like, you know, the screen just kind of like goes out, you know, nothing happens, and maybe the civilians are a little scared, you know, whatever. Doesn't do that. Just fucking blows up a third of the room, and then you fail the mission because you killed a civilian. I'm like, I didn't even shoot them. How was I supposed to know that this computer was loaded with C4?
Then on a similar note, the next mission, you go into like a dark room, just like a small little dark office room, yeah, I guess. Yeah. And there's an enemy behind one of those computers. And when you walk in, the enemy just naturally starts shooting at you. Well, the monitor's right in front of him. So he ends up blowing himself up because he shoots the monitor trying to shoot you.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's like the physics of this are absurd, and it's great. I remember so many of those things. And later on in the game, you get like a grappling hook that you can use, and it's like this tiny little spindle that like hauls you up. It's so ridiculous looking. It's great. And it's all within his watch. Like, he just kind of, like, Supermans it up with the grapple.
Right.
Like,
he
shoots a piton out of the watch, and it, like, latches onto stuff. It was really good. I love this game, dude. It's one of my favorites, hands down.
Yeah, I think it's severely underrated. And I don't know if maybe it got a bad rap because the movie.
I could see that, because GoldenEye was a much better movie than The World's Not Enough. And I'm even saying that objectively, I would say that's the case. Subjectively, I still love The World's Not Enough more. But that, like I said, first Bond movie, it's like it's always going to be my favorite.
Exactly.
Even if it's not the best, it's always going to be my favorite.
Yeah, because I think like Pierce Brosnan will probably always be my favorite Bond, but a lot of that's attributed to
the nostalgia.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, that's the Bond I grew up with.
I mean, I would say Daniel Craig is probably the best Bond. Sean Connery's definitely up there too, because he defined the role. Mm-hmm. But Craig, I like just because he's good at brooding. Like, he does a really good job. And he kind of walks the line between that brooding and also emotional side, like too often. Like, he doesn't go to the emotional side too often. It's not like he's not bipolar or anything like that, but he's surprisingly good with that type of thing. Like, nothing defines the Craig era more than in Casino Royale when they're doing the parkour chase and the dude like this is on the James Bonding podcast that I love. They talk about this, and I 100% agree with them. The parkour guy jumps over, like, there's a little like vent, there's a little like space above the wall because it's in a construction yard, and he just, you know, launches over the wall, and it's probably like an 8 foot high, it's indoors, so it's like a full room wall, but the ceiling is complete, so he's able to squeeze through the top of it, so he just kind of jumps over it, no problem. Then a second later, all of a sudden, Daniel Craig comes in as Bond, and he just breaks through the drywall, shakes off his head, like, shakes around, all the dust goes everywhere, and he just keeps chasing after him. And that's Daniel Craig as James Bond in a nutshell. Like,
yeah.
Roger Moore, he would have, like, ran around or something like that to chase after them. Probably Sean Connery would have done the same. Timothy Dalton might have tried to jump up to the top and, like, not quite, and try to have to get another way around. But Daniel Craig just bum rushes the wall. Oh, it's fucking great. So, yeah, I would agree with you, though, like, to kind of get back to what we're talking about with Pierce Brosnan. Like, he's always going to be my favorite, even if he's not necessarily the best from, if you're talking objectively,
right? Yeah.
So any final thoughts on the single player aspect of this?
Other than that, I think it's really well done. Again, like, it blends the spy elements with the action elements. Like, I honestly could safely say I would sit down and play through this whole game, like,
right
today.
It's so good.
So, yeah.
Next time we hang out, if it wasn't like 10 o'clock at night, right, well, I would say we should go back and play it again.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Just like, I don't know if I could do that anymore. I know. As soon as it hits midnight, I'm like, I got to go to bed. Yeah. I can't feel my feet, Justin.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Who are you? As soon as midnight hits, man, it's awful. I know, it's and then my, and my old man voice comes out and I just can't think anymore. Oh, that actually put a tickle in my throat. So, the multiplayer.
Yeah.
So, everyone remembers GoldenEye's multiplayer, and I'm here to tell you, I actually think this is better. Surprisingly enough.
It doesn't
have the cheap proximity mines that you always like to kill me with.
Yeah, but they're the greatest.
So, This multiplayer was great. It had a lot more gameplay modes. You could do like King of the Hill. You could do, I think you could do that in GoldenEye. Could too, couldn't you?
I'm trying to remember.
I'm pretty sure, actually. Well, from what I remember, this had more multiplayer modes.
Yeah, you could. So they had more modes. I'm pretty sure they had bots, which was a nice, you know, because to get the full multiplayer enjoyment from GoldenEye, you usually need four players. I mean, you could do it two players, but it kind of got old after a while. But with this one, with the bots, it opened up a lot more.
And so you could have just one friend over, or you could be even be by yourself and just mess around with it. Oh, we always called them owlbots because we always... well, our preferred song. So one of the things that when Justin and I first were becoming friends, we played hockey together. That's how we met. And he came over one day to play James Bond, to play video games and just hang out. And I asked him, like, well, what music do you like? And at the time, you were, like, big into classic rock. Like, that was your go-to, yes. You know, like, Ozzy Osbourne specifically. That was your big one. Oh, my God. I remember that.
Ooh,
and so I was like, well, what music do you like? Because I liked all the shitty music. And I even say that now because I loved Creed. And Creed was like the Nickelback of the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, not for nothing. Like, some of their music's enjoyable. So.
I still stand by the fact that Mark Tremonti, their guitarist, is a fucking great guitarist. He's a legitimately, like, really good guitarist, and he got underrated because of Creed. He ended up going to Alter Bridge, though, and Alter Bridge is, like, a crazy good band.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to them in ages, but they it's kind of weird. It's almost like, let's replace Scott Stapp with Scott Stapp 2.0. and just modify it so something that we want to do, because I think Scott Stapp's music was like too, like he had too much of a controlling influence. I don't really know. I stopped following the band when I was in like sixth or seventh grade, maybe eighth or ninth. I forget. So anyway, so I knew he didn't want to listen to my shitty music. So we found a Beatles record or a Beatles CD that my dad had. I was like, "Do you like the Beatles?" I was like, "This is the closest thing to classic rock that I know we have." And he goes, "Yeah." So we're just playing, and we have the Beatles on in the background, and we decided to mess. We decided to mess around with some of the game types, and we were playing with all explosives, and we had rocket launchers,
and the smallest level,
and the smallest level. So it was easier for us to find the enemies, to find the bots. And all I remember is that it came on. The song that came on was "Love Me Do." You know, love me do. You know I love you. I don't want to get copyright strike, but that's, you know. So please love me. Dude.
Explosion!
And so we'd be listening to that song, and we were just listening, and we noticed that song come on right when we were blowing up the shit out of every
owlbots,
like, all these owlbots, because we didn't. Those did not look like eyes.
No.
It's a capital I now, but like I was like, owlbots. Why the fuck are they called owlbots? Do you ever think that we would like that would be like if we ever got killed by them? You remember? All right, this is like this story's not gonna make any sense, but so. Just screaming like ow, like, you know, ow, like we're really mad, like how we used to scream Howard and Halo and shit like that.
Oh my gosh, Halo.
That's
days.
I'm gonna cut that out because that's not gonna make any sense. I'm just gonna go ow. So we would every time we would kill an AI bot or an owl bot, it always seemed to line up perfectly. Love me do. Some body would go flying off into the air. And it's fun because like it's weird because it's one of those stories where like I love it and I find it funny every time, but I know if someone was telling me this story, it'd be like, "You found that fucking funny?" Like,
okay.
What's wrong with you? It's like, I was six. Leave me alone. No, not that young. What? We were probably like, what, 13, 14?
Yeah, around that age.
Maybe younger. That kind of cemented our love for the multiplayer. But then we started even like messing around more with different like game types, and we did all snipers for the one. Remember that? We set up on opposite ends of this one snow map, and we would just like pick off the bots as they would come out of the tunnel and stuff like that. Right. And they would still get us though every now and then on that one. The explosive one, they stood less of a chance.
Right, yeah.
But on the snow one, they would actually get us every now and then, like depending on where they spawned. And I remember I got really good at picking them off from a distance when, especially now that I think about it, I don't know how I did it because the graphics were so fucking blurry. You can't see anything because there's like no anti-aliasing.
Right, yeah.
It's just all blur in the back. But like you see the one tiny shade of gray pixel.
Got it.
I'm like, that's his head. Got him. Oh my God. I don't sleep on this multiplayer. I'm serious. Like it's better than you think it would be. I don't think it holds up in a modern context by any stretch of the imagination, but comparing to what everyone's love of GoldenEye's multiplayer, which I'm not taking anything away from it. I loved GoldenEye's multiplayer, but controversial opinion, I like this more.
Yeah. And they even had, this was the one where they had the like, they had like the remote controlled missiles.
Yes.
And like the other gadgets, like the tank or like the remote controlled tank or something
That was Nightfire.
Oh, that was Nightfire.
But they did have the remote controlled missiles in both. So Nightfire is going to be a big episode for us because that was like would you say it's our favorite Bond game?
I think so, yeah.
Nightfire is such a good game. That's going to be a big episode. I want to have as many people as I can on that episode for people who love that game. I don't know when we're going to do it yet. I'm going to try to do it around one of the milestone episodes, like episode right now. Like 125, 130, something like that. But we'll see where it goes. But Nightfire, it had a missile launcher that you could, when you fired it, you would actually look like it was a first person perspective of the missile, and then you would control the missile to where it would need to go. In this one, you don't have that. You would turn on the laser guided thing, and after you would fire it, if you held R to like aim where you're going, depending on where you aimed it, it would then guide the missile to where the reticule or whatever, the, you know what I'm talking about, like, yeah, the sight is, yep, like wherever you're aiming the thing to, it would go there. So like you could be looking straight ahead, and you fire, and then you tap the R button and move the joystick to the right, so your character will stay put, but then your camera will shift to wherever you're moving the joystick, and then the missile will fire where you're aiming. And that's how you would do it. I mean, it was cool. It didn't really do well with depth, because yeah, you couldn't really tell where it was going to go, but you actually, like, it was surprisingly accurate, like more accurate than you would expect, considering you can't gauge depth because you're still standing in the same spot and you're just watching the missile fly like 100 yards in front of you. That was great. That was one of the most fun things about that game.
Yeah, it's severely underrated in my opinion.
I agree.
But yeah, just the fact that you could have the bots, the different game modes definitely made a world difference, because it made it keep it fresh, essentially.
I was gonna say, like, one of the other things that I forgot to mention about the single player things that are like underrated and things that it's like really good is the mission variety, because GoldenEye, fantastic, but it was a lot of the same style of missions. It was just kind of like run through a level, explore the level, and just kill everyone. In The World's Not Enough, there's actually a lot of stealth missions. There's at least one or two that I can think of. On top of that, there is some of the, like, the missions on rails. Like, GoldenEye had that too. You had the tank mission.
Yep.
From when Bond, you know, going through the streets of St. Petersburg in a tank in that movie. In this one, you get to ride on a snowmobile with a machine gun and just go down a mountainside and, like, take out enemies as you go. It was actually a lot of fun. And it was actually really difficult from what I remember when I was a kid. But there was a lot of mission variety. So you had like an on-rail shooter. You had the open world, like, first-person shooter. Even the first mission had a combination of stealth and action. Because, like, so in the first mission, you walk into the bank. You don't have any weapons on you at that moment. You go up to the banker's office. All hell breaks loose. And that's when you start killing all the bad guys. When you go down, you can run out with your gun, but the guards are going to start shooting you, and you can't shoot them because they're civilians. But if you put your weapon away and you just walk out unarmed, then they don't even notice a thing. So they kind of added a little bit. I mean, it's not a stealth level by any stretch, but it's kind of a little bit of a stealth segment, because you actually have to figure out, like, oh, if I put my weapon away, I can sneak through these guards and they're just going to think I'm a civilian like them. But if you come out with a gun, they're going to start shooting at me, and you have to book it the fuck out of there and not shoot them and hope that you have enough health to make it out, or they're just bad shots.
Right.
Or you could sneak your way out. Like I was saying, the mission variety is a surprisingly good aspect of it. Surprisingly high. Like, I was really happy with that too.
Yeah. And another really cool thing too, like, that when I first noticed, when you load a mission,
mm-hmm,
they have like all the different characters, and you can kind of scroll through and they have something a little bit different to say about the mission.
Yes.
And I was like, that's actually a really cool touch to have, because it's like you're slowly kind of like interacting with the characters, mm-hmm, just out of nature.
And that in that era of Bond, it made a lot of sense, because Bond had a lot of people kind of like giving him advice. You had M, of course,
yep,
you know, the leader of MI6. You had Robinson, you had Tanner, which are two like MI6 higher ups. They're, mm-hmm, kind of like aides, handlers or whatever. And then you had Q.
Right.
So like there was a lot of people in like in the MI6 that were like assisting or aiding Bond, not nearly as many in the modern day stuff. In like the Daniel Craig era, you have pretty much you have M, then I want to say you have Tanner, and then you have Q. I mean, I guess it's only one less, but like Tanner doesn't really do much Q actually does a lot more in the Daniel Craig ones, especially Inspector, which that movie was kind of garbage, but he was pretty good in it. So yeah, no, you're right. I like that aspect, a lot of it, how the each one, it kind of gets you to know those characters a little bit more. Even if you haven't seen the movies, it kind of gives you an idea of who they are as a person.
Yeah, because at least like from what I remember as a kid watching the Bond movies, I was kind of like M's a recurring figure. Like she stands out. Q stands out because of all the cool gadgets he gets. But other than that, I'm just kind of like, who is that? Huh? I don't care. I want more explosions.
Shoot another computer. Or like, was it in GoldenEye that you could shoot a chair and it would explode or something like that?
Yeah,
everything
that's right.
was exploding. Oh my God, it's great.
Oh man. But, and the other thing too, like the first mission, the more I think about it, it is a tutorial level without it being a tutorial level. Because you have, like, each of the little objectives you have to do, you have to use a different gadget for. So it puts you in that mindset of, oh, hey, like, I need to actively look at what gadgets are available to me to complete
at
a mission.
Each level to see what so when I come to the different problem that I don't have to, like, think about it. I just, like, oh, I know I have this gadget. This would probably be good for this situation.
Right. And, like, the part you were talking about where you can leave unarmed, that's kind of hinting at, hey, you can also apply stealth mechanics.
There's more than one way around this. Yeah. Dude, you're right. That first level's really good. Yeah. That's a really solid, like, well-designed first level. Next time we hang out, we're beating this game.
Yes.
Like, all the way through. I know I said I beat it as a kid, so I know I can do it.
Yes.
It's just been a while. So that would be next time
we're
going to do that. So to wrap it all up, any final thoughts on The World Is Not Enough for the N64?
Not much more, except underrate it. You should, if you're curious, I would highly recommend just checking it out. Play a couple levels of the single player, grab a friend, or if you're all by yourself, fight some Albots.
Some Albots. I love that name so much. I'll never be able to, like, I have to just say AI, because if I say AI bots, it just sounds, it's too hard. It doesn't roll off the tongue easily. Albots just rolls off nice and easily. It's because I think about it. AI is two syllables. Al is just one. Fuck you, AI. That's what I say.
Al wins.
Al wins by numbers alone. Easier. So, yeah, so that wraps up this episode of Still Loading. Thank you all once again for listening. As usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Still Loading Pod on all of them. If you want to support the show financially, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month helps me. I'll get to provide more content. There's a couple goals up there, so check that out. If that interests you, it would definitely help me out a lot. Justin, what do you have to plug?
Not much. If you like anime, cosplay, whatever, Instagram, it's just Kitsu Ninja. But, you know.
That's Kitsu Ninja, all one word, right?
Yeah.
And also, if you want to reach out to me, besides on all those social media things, you can also reach out to me at stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. And as usual, check out all the great shows on the Podbeard Network. And I think that should wrap it up. I know the sponsor of the Podbeard Network, Seat Giant. And Seat Giant is a ticket reselling website where you can buy tickets to your favorite shows, sports events, plays, things like that. If you use the promo code Podbeard, PODBEARD at checkout, it'll save you a little bit extra. That's seatgiant.com or seatgiant.ca for you Canadian friends.
Yay, Canada.
Yay, Canada. And I think that should be it. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and I will see you all next time.
Ah! Thank you.